As you came in today, I'm hoping that most of you got a piece of paper and a pencil or something. If you have not got one, there are some available. This hopefully will come in handy for you. I will tell you why eventually. I have a couple of things to cover before that, though. So let's not mark them up quite yet. Great. All right. Everything's working. Okay. So I'm going to be reading from Ezekiel 47. And if you have your Bibles with you, I invite you to open that to Ezekiel chapter 47. Before reading it, though, I want to give some background information on who Ezekiel is and what sort of situation he's speaking into. So Ezekiel would have been speaking to the situation where Israel is currently in exile. Most of the northern kingdom's already been taken out of the promised land, and they're all the way out in the Babylon region, in southern Mesopotamia. And that's very far away from where they saw themselves as being God's people. They saw themselves in the promised land as a way of being blessings to the nations. This is, being in the promised land meant that God was with them and that they could live under his right rule. And it was through that that they would bless everyone. And now, without this sense of God's presence, they were looking and they're asking themselves, where is their hope in the midst of this? They're under the authority of one of the most powerful nations in the world. Where is God's presence in the midst of this situation? So in Ezekiel, we're all the way in chapter 47 here. One of the important things to know throughout the book is that in chapter 10, we have God's presence leaving the temple. And as God's presence leaves the temple, it opens up Israel to judgment. And the judgment comes their way, and that comes in the form of exile. And now, right before our passage in chapter 47, God's presence re-enters the temple. It re-enters that space and enables that blessing that comes alongside, this vision of blessing and of peace for them to live in the midst of. Now, your papers. The passage that I'm going to be reading has been described as a verbal cartoon. It's very image heavy, so I want you to actually draw on these papers, maybe an unusual sermon request, but as I read through this passage, I'm going to read through it twice to give you extra time to draw whatever you see in this passage. If you're not good at drawing, draw stick figures, just draw things that, symbols to represent what's there. I invite you not to be shy, give this a go. All right, let's listen to God's word. Chapter 47 of Ezekiel. The man brought me back to the entrance of the temple, and I saw water coming out from under the threshold of the temple towards the east, for the temple faced east. The water was coming down from under the south side of the temple, south of the altar. He then brought me out through the north gate and led me around the outside to the outer gate facing the east, and the water was flowing from the south side. As the man went eastward with a measuring line in his hand, he measured off 1,000 cubits, and he led me through water that was ankle deep. He measured off another 1,000 cubits and led me through water that was knee deep. He measured off another 1,000 and led me through water that was up to the waist. He measured another 1,000, and now it was a river that I could not cross because the water had risen and was deep enough to swim in, a river no one could cross. He asked me, "Son of man, do you see this?" Then he led me to the bank of the river. Where I arrived there, I saw a number of trees on each side of the river. He said to me, "This water flows toward the eastern region and goes down to the Arabah, where it enters the sea. When it empties into the sea, the water there becomes fresh. Swarms of living creatures will live wherever the river flows, and there will be large numbers of fish because this water flows there and makes the salt water fresh. So where the river flows, everything will live. Fishermen will stand along the shore from En Gedi to En Eglaim, and there will be places for spreading nets. The fish will be of many kinds, like the fish of the great sea. But the swamps and the marshes will not become fresh. They will be left for salt. Fruit trees of all kinds will grow on both banks of the river. Their leaves will not wither, nor will their fruit fail. Every month they will bear, because the water from the sanctuary flows to them. Their fruit will serve for food, and their leaves for healing." It's the first reading. I'm going to read it again. Now that we know this bigger picture that's there, if you're not drawing this, I invite you just to let these words sit over you, to pay attention particularly to the second half from verse 7 onward of this big vision of what happens when the water from the temple comes into the land. Starting in verse 1, "The man brought me back to the entrance of the temple, and I saw water coming out from under the threshold of the temple toward the east. For the temple faced the east. The water was coming down from under the south side of the temple, south of the altar. Then he brought me out through the north gate and led me around the outside to the outer gate facing the east. And the water was flowing from the south side. As the man went eastward with a measuring line in his hand, he measured off 1,000 cubits and led me through water that was ankle deep. He measured another 1,000 and led me through water that was knee deep. He measured another 1,000 and led me through water that was up to the waist. He measured another 1,000. And now it was a river that I could not cross because the water had risen and was deep enough to swim in, a river that no one could cross. He asked me, 'Son of man, do you see this?' Then he led me back to the bank of the river. When I arrived there, I saw a great number of trees on each side of the river. He said to me, 'This water flows toward the eastern region down into the Arabah, where it enters into the sea. Where it empties out into the sea, the water becomes fresh. Swarms of living creatures will live wherever the river flows. There will be a large number of fish because the water that flows there makes the salt water fresh. So where the river flows, everything will live. Fishermen will stand along the shore from En Gedi to En Eglaim, and there will be a place for spreading nets. The fish will be of many kinds, like the fish of the great sea. But the swamps and marshes will not become fresh. They will be left for salt. Fruit trees of all kinds will grow on both banks of the river. Their leaves will not wither, nor will their fruit fail. Every month they will bear, because the water from the sanctuary flows to them. Their fruit will serve for food, and their leaves for healing." I'll give another 5 or 10 seconds for those drawing to polish up their works of art. If I were to summarize the sentence in, or summarize this passage in one sentence, it would be this: from God's presence comes an ever-expanding river, which brings abundant light, life, and astounding healing. And as we walk through this text, we're going to be taking 3 different segments of this sentence here. First, God's presence. Second, the ever-expanding river. And third, abundant life and astounding healing. To begin with, in your drawings, I hope you had a temple. I drew this, so don't be too judgy on the images that I found. I hope that you had a temple at some point, because this is a central image to what Ezekiel is presenting. And he's choosing to do a temple because a temple is a very powerful thing for Israel. It represents something that is much deeper. The temple represents God's presence in their midst. And this was, again, central to who they saw, who they were, and the reason why they could provide blessing to the other nations. A great example from this comes from Exodus chapter 32 and 33. This is where Moses, right after this golden calf incident, is talking with God, and God says, I will send Israel into the promised land, but I will not go with them. My wrath is too much against them. And Moses says, but if you don't go, we don't want to go. We'll stay in the desert if you're not with us. It's not the promised land we want, but your very presence. Because Moses is in tune there with the sense that it's the presence of God that brings life, that brings all of this blessing. And here we have God's presence in the midst of the temple as a central part. If we look further on in the New Testament, we see this image of the temple and God's presence continued. So Jesus identifies himself as the temple, as God's very presence in their midst. Later on in the book of Ephesians, Paul talks about the church as the temple, that we as people with the Spirit are God's presence in some new way, in a way that they didn't imagine back then. In the church, as in the time of Israel, it's all about the presence of God. And I think sometimes this can be a difficult thing for us as people in the church, as all the things that we need to do within the church or all the things that we can do as part of the church in the community, that we can forget that it's all about God's presence and the life that we receive in God. It's not in all of these things that we do. We do not bring the blessings ourselves as much as God working in us, that it is God's presence in us. And that's where Ezekiel starts. He starts with the temple, and the temple that has God's presence in its midst. Back to our image. Hopefully we have a temple, but also that you drew some sort of river. This is the second part, the ever-expanding river. I'm not sure how large of a stream you would have done. Looking at the word that is used in Hebrew, the stream that's starting is about, if you have a water bottle, it's just the size of a little trickle coming out of that, or you could picture a garden hose. Now, if you're imagining a garden hose pouring out some water, and you put that on the top of a hill, you stand a distance away, you're not going to expect that more water will come. You're not going to expect that there's going to be a gushing river. There's something unusual about what's happening here. The different measurements that Ezekiel mentions, that the person guiding him through, is every 1,000 cubits, that's about 500 meters, 525 meters. So at every increment, he's finding that the river is expanding more and more. At the first 500 meters, it's up to his ankles, and it's up to his knees, and it's up to his waist, and then it's too deep to swim in. You'd be in trouble if you tried to cross that river. And this is a statement about what God's presence brings. The people that are listening to this are people in southern Mesopotamia. They're far away from their land. They're far away from their image of what blessing looks like or what they think that blessing might look like. And they're asking themselves, where is our hope? These are people that are thinking, they're kind of feeling like that trickle of water, that it's just, it's falling off into dry land and it's just getting soaked in, and they're thinking, what sort of difference can we make? How can we be people of blessing? It's clear then, in looking at this passage, Ezekiel is giving an image to the people of life that can come from God, that expands, that inflates as it moves on, that God, working in and through a people, can take something that looks small and turn it into something much, much more. And I'm wondering, what does this vision look like for us? What does this mean? Is there places in which we need to have these reminders of hope? I have two suggestions in where this could be. I'm sure if you were to list some things, you could find some more, and you can find some that identify with your own situations, but I'll name just two here. That the first is looking at the church in North America. It doesn't necessarily get mentioned very often, but there's often a fear of decline. Sometimes we can feel a little bit like the exiles, that we're just this little trickle soaking in to the dry earth. Another application might be a little bit more directly in our own personal lives. That all the little things that we do in our day-to-day, that these things are just absorbed like water into dry land. We feel like it just sinks in and doesn't make a difference. We can't see what it's doing beyond. And to both of these images, there's this message that Ezekiel brings. God works when it's in his presence in ways beyond our understanding. This ever-expanding river comes from just this little trickle, this little stream. When it is God working behind it, that God carries this forward. And a caution for this is that we might not always see exactly where it goes and exactly where it leads. We might not be the person that sees it turn into a stream, but we can have the faith and that we can have the hope that in God's work, that God is able to do this. Working on to our next section here, we have lots to draw from, lots to draw on, and all these signs of life. There's abundant life and astounding healing. So I'm hoping that you drew at least a tree in your drawing. And if you only drew one, I invite you to add a few more. If you only drew them on one side, I invite you to add them on both sides. If you only had one type of tree, add some other types. And more than that, there's extra life in there. There's fish in the water. There's animals coming and feeding on the fruit and whatnot. I lived in Israel, so I drew these animals from memory. That one's supposed to be a rabbit. I don't know what the other ones are anymore. Now, what is east of the temple? We know that this water is flowing east. What we can kind of discern looking at Israel is that east of the temple, there's very little rainfall. So like in Jerusalem, you're getting 16 inches of rainfall a year. And then there's a watershed ridge, so we know clouds dump all the rain. You go about 3 kilometers to the side, and you're getting 2 to 4 inches of rainfall a year. So this is not a very fertile space. The soil's not good either, so this is hiking near En Gedi. It's very dry. You don't see any trees in this area. This is a little bit further up where I'd imagine the river going through. Again, we don't see much vegetation happening in that region. The day that I went there, it was cloudy, and it was like the one day a year it rained, so that's those clouds would have been unusual for that region. And it's in that region that Ezekiel is picturing this river flowing through. And rather than just passing by on the top of the soil, it's creating life for everything that it touches. It's this very dry soil, but it doesn't just soak in. It becomes this ever-expanding river that gives long-lasting life. There's trees that are growing. There's animals that it's supporting. There's this whole culture. It's like this vision of the blessing that Israel had imagined from their promised land, that other nations would come to them and see the blessings that God gives. So think again how this would sound to a bunch of people in exile or about to be thrown into exile. God will be with his people again. And from this small trickle, from the small place, he would bring abundant life. He would carry this vision forward of peace and of healing. Now, there is also that note, and an extra note, that's not just abundant life here, but healing that needs to take place. There's hurt that's caused in the world. And in the image that Ezekiel brings in verses 8 and 9 in our text is that the water itself becomes healed, that everything that this river touches, because of its source, because it's coming from the very presence of God, brings healing. So if you didn't draw the Dead Sea in there, I invite you to draw it. The Dead Sea is called the Dead Sea because the only living things that you'll really find there today are people. And people love taking pictures of themselves in the Dead Sea because it almost tries to push you out, it feels like, when you're in it. If you're in the ocean, you're a little more buoyant because it's not the same as fresh water. It's a little more dense. The ocean would be 3.5% salinity. The Dead Sea is 35% salinity. So it's only 65% water. There's a lot of minerals. It doesn't feel like water. It's kind of gross. But people will go in there anyways. And because like our skin is slightly porous, and we are more water than the sea is, you dehydrate really quickly. So you need to make sure you don't stay in there for very long. And this doesn't have anything living in it that we can really see. You don't go fishing in the Dead Sea. Another thing is, if you take just like a little bit of it in a glass and then fill the rest of that glass with water, it's not going to make it fresh. It's going to be terrible. I got some in my mouth. It was not a good experience. But something different happens when the water from God's temple, from God's presence comes, and it cures the Dead Sea. It makes it clean. And this is a miraculous healing that takes place. This is a sea that is 50 kilometers long, 50 kilometers long, and 15 kilometers wide at its widest point. This is a big body of water, starting from this little trickle from the temple, but because it is God's presence, it brings healing to all that it touches. And what's more, it doesn't just become fresh, but it too is teeming with life. So we have fish from all sorts of different places. We have fishermen standing shoulder to shoulder because there is such a variety of fish in this region. So you can also add fruit trees that bear fruit year-round. The leaves for these trees provide healing for the nations. And this is the three different steps that we've walked through. First, God's presence. Second, this ever-expanding river. And third, the abundant life and astounding healing. What would this mean for the exiles, for the people that are originally hearing Ezekiel speak this message? That God's presence would come again, that this would bring hope for them, that God's presence brings life, And that when God is involved, he can take just this little bit and amplify it into a river that brings this abundant life and healing. Looking back at the two points that I drew earlier for the church in North America, we can be confident that where God is present and where God is working, that he will carry his work forward. That we have hope because God is present and with us. For our own lives, we can be confident that when we are equipped with God's Spirit, that there is nothing so small that God cannot continue to use. The good news is that it's not up to us and all of our doing, all of the things that we can do that can exhaust us. It comes from God's presence. So our call is to be nourished in that presence, to spend time in God's presence, to be equipped by his Spirit as we go forward into our day-to-day and trust that God will bring these things to expand them into what he wills and desires. Let me finish with just one example of what this might look like. I have a friend in a CRC church out in Ontario, and over the course of 4 weeks, his church had been vandalized a number of times. Often they would break one of the windows, rather large windows, or the doors. They wouldn't steal anything. They were just coming in and wrecking it a little bit. And they had this question that they had to deal with. How are we going to respond? How are we going to respond that this is happening over and over again? How would we respond as a community? How would your community respond to this? The way that they had responded was in putting messages on the wood doors or the panels. The messages had things like, always loved, always forgiven, and that you are welcome here. CBC News ended up picking up the story from this church, and they had a lovely article on it. They talked about how this church, from a quote from their pastor, that it felt natural for them as a church community that believes in hope and love and forgiveness, that this would be a hallmark of how they respond. Their desire was to demonstrate that love was better than fear, that they had an anchoring in the hope that comes from this presence of God, and this gave them a confidence that whatever they were facing, that this love would be better than fear and hope a better response than isolation. Now, they didn't only set up these signs, they also had an opportunity to connect with the community. And they brought in members of the community to talk about what is safety, what does it mean to live here as a community. And it ended up being a bridge and a way of restoring relationship in their midst. So this is where I want to close then, with this encouragement to open up our imaginations to how we can respond in hope rather than fear in our current situations, knowing that as the people of God, we have the same life-giving presence in our midst. May our nourishment from Christ prompt us to respond in ways that bring love and life and healing wherever we are. Let's pray. Creator God, you create and you sustain. You take what is little and you multiply. You bring abundant life and astounding healing. As your church, as those who compose a temple through the work of your Spirit, may we be people who demonstrate your presence. May we see these places of healing in life come from this church and work its way into our homes, our workplaces, and our lives. I pray this all in your name. Amen.